SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and had a little issue with this. Turned out to be a problem down in Florida, as it turns out. So KC dealing with that, and we'll see. May have a phone hiccup, which haven't had one of those in a long time. When it there was a year, this has got to go back, I don't know, 10 years? More, maybe more. We were maybe an hour and a half in, give or take, and the phones couldn't go, and so I ended up, having to just tap dance all the way to the end, which was an adventure. I mean, we get this. It's, it's the technology. There's nothing you can do. But we'll get Andy in first, as long as Kay is getting the phones rolling. He said, we communicate on Messenger. And so, sometimes with It makes me laugh. He comes back and says, "I think I smell smoke." I actually smell smoke, which that's a little unnerving. When we were in the old building, that building, you would believe it. I mean, the thing every 6 months the wires would fry down in Florida. Pretty funny. We got Andy Serling in here before Thanksgiving, and it's funny how carryovers, they happen organically, and great way to start the Holiday Fest week in New York with a monstrous pick six carryover, and also the Naira Betts pick five. And it's a challenging sequence. It gives rise to a great week of racing. Andy, good morning.
Morning. I'm trying to wrap myself around the carryovers happen organically. I'm trying to figure out if that's the statement of the obvious or incorrect.
Well, they.
Well, how else do they happen?
Well, I'm saying, that's a good point. I mean,
what would be the definition of it happening organically? I'm just trying to figure it out because you like those turns of phrase.
Well. They have to happen. They just have to happen.
Like everything. So everything happens organically.
I guess that's fair. Let's also talk about, and we've discussed this. There are venues that choose to put sequences together that are going to be ridiculously daunting.
We've never done that.
I agree.
We've never had a last race with 10 first-time starters or anything. That's never happened.
There's a certain randomness of distribution and how, different horses are played in multi-race bets compared to how they're played on the board, and that's sort of a discussion. I mean, unless you can see the pools, I remember back in the day we could see the pools, different tote system. And I remember a 70-1 shot. 70-1 shot winning the first leg. I think Gary Siaka traded, actually. And I remember that there was 84,000 in the pool, maybe. I don't know what it was or wasn't. And there was $14 on that horse. The horse was 7,000-1 in the pick six. I mean, which is remarkable if you think about it. It means it was virtually left off every ticket, right? I mean, for there to be $14, what was there like, Gay? There were seven tickets. So there was one ticket that was like a quick pick, right, that singled six horses. And there was one ticket that was four singles, a three, and a two, right? Something like that. It's almost mathematically impossible, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's why, you know, when someone discussed with me on Twitter where I had put too low an estimate on how many tickets were alive early in the pick four, and their estimate was too high, the number was a little closer there, but somewhere in the middle. It was like 1,000, I think it was about 1,000 as it turned out, something somewhere in there. It's hard to know. You know, you look at it like, you know, let's say the first race, there could easily be, there are horses that'll win that are 8-5. But in the pick six, they're probably closer to 3-1, right? They're probably somewhere closer to a quarter, you know, 20-25% of the pool, because the major money spreading is using, you know, three or four horses. Whereas there are going to be situations where horses, a first-time starter, you know, take a maiden turf race, right? Where there's four, you know, first-time starters or first-time turfers, where a random 30-1 shot could win, had some pedigree, that horse might be closer to 15-1 in the pick six, right? Because the bigger money is, everybody is putting in bigger money, had that horse on their tickets as one of seven or eight, right? So a significant portion of the pool used that horse as much as they used almost, you know, horses that were 4-1. It's just it's an odd way to look at the distribution. It's going to be much different than the odds board in some races, not all of them, but in some. So, how that played out, it was sort of random. I mean, it's funny that there were two not covered in the last race, and it's the horse who won the last race on Sunday, I guess. I don't understand why that horse was that big a price, the biggest price of the board.
I agree.
She'd been a topic of conversation on Talking Horses, where Aragona mentioned her, and I think he had her fourth, and, you know, I said I had her as the infamous fifth pick. But I agreed with, you know, if you look at her in retrospect, she ran against reasonable horses in her turf races, and she ran, you know, buyer figures in the low to mid-70s in her two turf races, which put her in line with a number of horses in the race. And it's just random. And it's not surprising sometimes when a horse might randomly just sort of fall out of favor and drips up. And those are your job as a horse player, to try to find those horses throughout the day, week, year, whenever. But I'm surprised that horse wasn't covered the pick six. But there was a weird array of horses winning. And once again, you know, in both sequences, you know, people were saying, and they were right, Goal for the King, the Charlie Baker horse, won the feature. Well, that horse was a single, but as we've said many times, pick sixes and, you know, pick fives, but pick sixes especially, once, you know, a single short price of your friends, one or two short prices in a sequence does not guarantee that it's going to be a short payout. Right, I mean, that pick five was essentially a pick four, and that pick six was essentially a pick five, and both went unhit with pretty substantial pools.
I completely agree about the Giamatti filly. I talked about it yesterday.
Horses just got lost. It's more surprising that she wasn't. I mean, the pick five's a little bit around the pool was, you know, the pool was, I think, you know, around mid 40s, but the pick six, yeah, that was. I mean, there was 373,000 bet in that pick six. So there was a lot of money put in there, but there were other weird results early, right?
A little bit. Yep, just enough.
Well, there was that firster, you know, that really, you know, there were six firsters in there, and that horse was the outlier, right? I mean, you know, unless you were using all in there, you weren't using that horse. So that's a 15-1 firster that might have been 30-1 in pick six, right? In pick five, maybe higher. I mean, you had a bevy of good-looking firsters in that race, right?
Right, right, right.
Someone's calling me from Blayton Beach.
Ah,
sales call.
I don't know. It could be Jerry Seinfeld's parents. Actually, they live in Boynton.
From Del Boca Vista. Where is Boynton Beach?
Nice. I said that's where my parents were there too. They were in Boynton. Just above Del Rey, below Palm, below West Palm.
All right. Anyway, so what are we discussing the sequence before we? Get
yeah, let's do it because it we talked last night and it is tough and knock on wood. I think we're getting snow here. I don't know. Are you okay?
Yeah, we are.
Good.
Thanks.
All right.
Were you worried about me?
I'm worried about the keeping these grass races.
Yeah, whatever. I'm not discussing weather.
No, I get it, but...
No, you don't. But anyway. So the sequence. Well, let's see. It's hard. You know, the fourth race, we will presume turf. I don't think there's any reason to presume it would be otherwise. They left me a voicemail. Might not have been a sales call. Or it might have been. You know, you get to look at the board, though I don't know which board helps you, but I mean, you've obviously got a horse in mouth, the Alpha, Christophe Clement, that's just sort of a must-use, much more than Seismic Wave, the other one with experience that you might use, the Mott horse. I didn't like the horse that horse raced, that horse came out of, whereas Mouthy Elf did ride the rail, you know, and then sort of came off the rail and stretch, and why probably had trouble passing Empire War. Empire War ran well enough the next start. Suggests that race was pretty good. Mouthy Elf's probably okay. I mean, you've got the Marchelier on the rail, and I think he sold for about £425,000 when he sold it to Tattersall last year. You have to imagine that horse has to be used on the rail for Chad Brown, and you got to make decisions, right? I mean, you've got Sea of Hope, a first trip for Clement, where the first Volt Madame was okay on the turf, and then the Top Fletcher's horse. I mean, Dr. English, that horse has got some pedigree. That horse is a half to some nice turf horses, so and it's 3 for 3 to Dam in the English Channel, so I'd probably want to have that horse somewhere. But once again, it's how much money are you going to spend, and we're going to go. The fifth race obviously starts the Nyra Best Pick 5, too, with a carryover. I'm not as big a fan as Mrs. Ramona G as other people are. I mean, she has to be used, but, boy, she had a pretty nice setup last time, coming up the fence and the slow pace. And you know I'm going to be much more interested in Ella Weasel, who had the wide trip in that race and was forced to move, you know, mid-move into the slow pace wide. So I actually prefer her of the two, but I think you have to use them both. You know, No More Rich Blondes is a funny horse because she's not a big price. She has Terpeg on the Dam side, but the winners were Kitten's Joys. She's a hard spun, so that's pedigree. And, you know, Linda Rice, it's funny, if you look at this horse, the previous race was trained by Arnaud Delacour and was 3-5, part of a 3-5 entry, the third place finisher. Both this horse and the third place finisher were shipped to Linda Rice, and the other one tried the turf for the first time, Bloody Point, who appears in the PPs here, right, and won for Linda at 9-1 against a much tougher field. And now this one's going to be a shorter price, but she's making the same move. You know, whether or not you think Lightning's going to strike twice, I don't know, but you have to use that horse. So, I mean, you sort of have to use some combination of 2, 6, 7. I think the 4 is a little interesting in a price, but, you know, that's sort of a different multi-race use. If Okiamo actually runs in the 7s and been scratched, the scratch this weekend was obviously due to the horse being entered in here, but he's been scratched, best race, like 3 times. If he runs, he's a horse people are going to lean on, but geez, you want to lean on a horse who's been a vet scratched 3 times, right? In spots you sort of couldn't lose. But the question is, who is your backup? Is it Millie's Party Boy, who actually didn't run horrendously last time, but really isn't much horse, or the first-time dirt horse, Local Edition? Local Edition does have plenty of dirt pedigree in the Dam side, but it's a Cosmonaut, right?
Yeah.
But they're the obvious other two. I mean, my idiotic long shot, the King and I, maybe can fill out the Trier Super here. Did have trouble last time, but I don't believe that horse is going to win. So I think, you know, for people who have reason, you know, smaller budgets, Okiamo is a horse they have to lean on, right?
I said that earlier today. Yeah,
and
I agree.
And then in the seventh race, I mean, you've got a situation where Argon would have won last time if Dylan, you know, wasn't, and I don't want to knock Dylan. I like Dylan. I think he's a good rider, but he sort of allowed himself to be a little victimized in that race. But Mini P out of the same race had trouble as well and broke slow. And they both have to be used in here. I mean, Country Flats is the speed again and ran well last time. I think that Argon and or Mini P will probably beat him, so I would relegate him to a lower spot. And if it's decided, is Rhode Island good enough? How do you judge the Rhode Island race versus the race that Argon's coming out of? I prefer Argon and Mini P, but it's not impossible. And even a horse like the 6 in Lee, you need to see somewhere, right? So, you know, maybe the 1A and 7 or A's, the 3
the
or
2 and
or
the 3.
C's, and, yep. And then the 6 of C. But, you know, these are not, you know, this is not small tickets we're talking about. And then you get the 8th race. I mean, geez. Yep. awful lot of horses can win this race. I mean, I'm picking Peel up to fight, but it's not like the kind of horse I'm going to put a ton of money on to pick six or pick five. He's just one of a number of horses I use. I'm not a Morning Breeze fan, but he could win. I mean, let's assume the field stays intact because it's a redraw. Benevolence can definitely win this race. I know he's coming back on short rest, but he was forced to move too soon into a moderate pace last time. I don't love Stony Bennett with the presence of Bavaro, but he's not impossible. I think Serratalto can absolutely win this race. I'm not a fan of Blewett, but you've got to use him somewhere, right? You know, yep. I think he's a little slower than a lot of these, but
why can't
Bob Letcher has great layoff numbers, so
you haven't even
out your own peril.
You haven't even mentioned Cecilia Mike, who can win.
Well, he's too slow to win, I think. But
well, there's pace in here. There's pace for him to run into.
But there's better horses closing. I mean, he'd be a
three, right.
But I mean, he's not impossible. He's too slow, I think. But he's maybe he's a C. I mean, he's not 100% impossible. I mean, the last race, I think, you know, probably, I mean, if you use four, it would be Mobridge, Cluntia, with Exultation, McKagan. I mean, Cluntia would be my C, and the others would be A's. I don't know. But the Exultation's run well in this course, and he likes two turns. Mobridge can clearly win, though I didn't like his last race, even though he was over his head and he was way too far back. McKagan can win, but he's going to have to rate in here. It's not an easy scenario. There's plenty of speed in here. But, you know, these are not, you know, these are not easy races, and they're
not
races where you can say, well, one of these two is kind of supposed to win, and even the single. I mean, geez, a single, Okiyama's going to win if he runs his race, but my gosh, you can't, how much can you trust him, right?
Well, it depends on your budget, obviously. And you know, it's funny that, to go back to the second leg, I thought Eloise really kind of stood for me. I mean, I thought
that... He's a major player in there, no question about it. But Linda, of course, has to be used, too.
I suppose, yeah.
It's an unknown factor, and it's a clever move, and she's got pedigree, and it's Linda. She's sharp. It's not like Eloise and Mrs. Ramona G are some sort of superstars that, you know. And I think you have to use that horse. And that, listen, how much do you want to let Mrs. Ramona G beat you? That was off a layoff. Why can't she improve, right?
She's that's true.
Lightly
that's
raised
true.
And young, and so, that's you know, true. I think she's raised to take a step forward more than Eloise does, right? You know, I'm Eloise's biggest fan, but she is who she is. She's not going to suddenly jump up. I'm not, you know, I picked the race 6-7 or 7-6. I'm not, but you're trying to hit pick sixes and pick fives, especially this one. It's a very interesting sequence. And the other thing is, it's not like there's some short price in there where you and I are saying, well, this horse is the big favorite. I'm going to try to beat it. I don't know. How many horses in that sequence are under 5-2?
Like Okiyama, right?
I mean, I know he's got Blewett as a 9-5 favorite. I could see Blewett going off the fourth choice in that race, right?
Agreed.
And I could also see him as the favorite. But he's a layoff horse, and those, you know, as you know, those go either way. And he's really not fast enough to beat a number of horses in that race. So he's
sort of
a dubious favorite, right?
I agree.
I mean,
and the 12-1
made him the favorite. It was a tough line to make. I mean, you know, the original draw without Blewett, he had Morning Breeze the favorite. I had trouble seeing him as a favorite, but I wouldn't want to make the morning line in that race, and I'm sure David struggled a great deal with it.
Well, T loves a fight's not going to be 12-1.
I don't think so, but
he's coming down.
Warm lately does kind of stink. I mean, she ran a little bit last time, and Linda does well on trainer changes, but she's getting it from Michelle Nevin. So, I mean, what price is going to be? 7-1?
Yeah, 6-7.
Maybe 7-2. You know, what's the lowest price you take on her? 6-1? 8-1? 10-1? I'm not. She's got a horse I'm going to bet on and not be at all surprised when she finishes 7th.
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough. Benevolence, you know.
Yeah, that's a very difficult race. Because there's nobody in there where you feel like is an anchor of the race, right?
Agreed.
You know, you could say in the first leg that, you know, of those that ran, Malfial is the anchor, and Demarchelier is probably the anchor of the firsters. Doesn't mean, you know, if you had a small budget and you wanted to close your eyes and pray, you'd use those two, right? best one that ran, likely best
yes.
one that hasn't run.
Yes, I like that. I like that approach. I said earlier that, you know, it looked like there were a couple of A's, a couple of B's, a couple of C's.
There are. I'm not saying there aren't.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, these, like you said, it depends on your budget. I think it's a very interesting sequence. The racing is terrific this week, and it's, you know, it's almost sad because it shows how good the racing could have been at this meet if the weather hadn't destroyed it.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
look no farther than that race that Chad won with that half to McLean's Music, right? There were 11 entered and ended up with 5 because 5 of the 11 ran it off the turf race the day before. And the whole ecosystem is disrupted by the weather. It's just destroyed this meet so far. And it's too bad because you look at, I mean, people will see Thursday and Friday. Our prize card's great. Really, it's great. And I'm not, you know, I'm happy to come on here and say, you know, the cards are what they are. And as you know, I'm not, you know, I'm going to promote our product, but I'm not going to sit here and lie to people. And of course, people see through dishonesty in racing, you know. But the prize card's really terrific.
Let's actually
get at stakes.
Jump, yeah, we'll jump in on the stake for a second, and the fall highweight on Thursday.
Well, the fall highweight's unhandicapable because you don't really know who's running at Penn National. So
that's
until
true.
You know who runs at Penn National and who's going to run, I can't make an opinion on that race.
I hear you.
I mean, just can't, you know. I mean, I'm actually interested in the horse on the outside who's not cross-entered. I think that horse is kind of a neat horse. Ran pretty well in the Heartwood. So the kind of horse going to get lost, and I'm not sure he's not as likely to win this race as about anybody in here. I mean, no knock on Runaway Lou, but he got away with murder last time, and frankly, if you like him, aren't you supposed to like Celtic Chaos? Didn't he run better?
Yeah.
You know, trying to close into that, you know, at crawling pace. And this is a fun mix of horses. I just don't know who's going to run. In the last race is a terrific stake, right? The Winter Memories. Competition of ideas, Adina Del Sur, Scott Stormy, Carp Kapla Temptress, significant form. Good races.
How about the, in fact, what about the other turf, the
that race
baby,
came up a
the
little.
Baby race?
Yeah, well, I mean, that race, Empire War, is going to be the worst to beat in Market Bubble, and Five Star General had a little bit of a chance, but thought that came up surprisingly thin, to be honest with you.
It's a good point, actually.
Ones, when you look at Fridays, the Forever Together came up a very deep race, right? Laminator's in there, and she's the horse to beat, but there's definitely other horses, Belladays and Penn Jade. Special Event, I think, for sure, is dangerous in there. Dolce Lily's not impossible. I thought the Cumley camp an interesting race. And Blaine
yeah, give
the
us...
horse to beat. Well,
yeah.
Blaine is the horse to beat. And he ran well behind the horse, came back to win the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. I'm not sure if that's a good or bad, but she's the horse to beat in there. I you know, Remedy's also interesting coming in for Brad Cox. Thinking the Union's not impossible. Al Barrow Bella's not totally impossible. She was trying to turf with dirt with War Cabinet. I mean, that the key sense, the race before that, the eighth race camp, but, you know, big field, big full field. Collegeville Girl is finally back.
Yep.
A lot of horses coming out of May of the Mist. These are good races.
And we still have got Saturday and Sunday to draw, which the Discovery.
Yeah, I won't be there Sunday. I'm off on Sunday, but Saturday.
The Discovery.
Fun, yes.
The sprint, right? The turf sprint and the Long Island. And then on Sunday
the
you're
Philly
looking...
Turf, the Philly Turf sprint. The, I don't know, Autumn Days.
Autumn Days, the Notebook for the two-year-olds, and the Teppan.
The Teppan. It's funny that amazing year the Teppan had, right? Her two losses were in Saratoga.
Right, that's right. That's right.
Beats in both of them, right?
Unbelievable.
Well, I mean, lost to good horses, but she got a brutal beat to Diana. Come on, won that, right?
I think with, with Celestine,
and then,
maybe?
DeCita beat her by a dirty nose.
DeCita, there you go. That's
spot,
right. That's right.
Jump.
That's right. That's right.
Look at that. It's 10:30. Perfect time.
Almost. And let me ask you about one. I want to ask you about one performance from the week past. what should Todd do with that Argentinian horse that won the off the turf Red Smith?
Hopes other races get ran off the turf.
Right?
I don't know. I doubt he has any delusions of grandeur.
Well, 96 buyer, and, you know.
I doubt he has any delusions of grandeur.
All right. Well,
fine, you know. Listen, the reason he'll leave horses in off the turf. That horse had, you know, some dirt for him from down from South America. Worked out well for him because he was certainly a more likely winner of that race in the dirt than the turf.
Yeah, you know, I'll be interested to see what.
No, somebody has to be.
Yeah, there you go. There was some. There was another.
You're going to be betting Soglio back on some dirt races going forward. Well, I mean, he lost to Bob, right? So you must be excited about him too.
Well, I Village King was a kind of a, you know, it's kind of one of those mystery horses that.
What do I really think about that race? I think that Irad gave Control Group a less than terrific ride. That's what I really think about that race. I don't understand why he wouldn't use that horse's speed as his weapon. That is a horse that when he was good in winning races, he was. And I'm not saying he's as good as he was last year, but I know that rating him in a wacky slow pace and getting caught inside of, like, you know, of exulting like he did was not the right decision that I think was most beneficial to that horse's chances. So that's what I really think about that race.
Yeah.
I mean, he should have gone to lead, opened up two or three, used his speed as a weapon, and let the chips fall as they may, because that's how he ran when he won. And clearly, whether it's the connections or IRAD, don't have the same confidence in them they did in him last year. But I didn't think that was taking advantage of his tactical advantage in the field. But that was ceding your advantage. And I think that led to the result, possibly.
Okay.
Well, I didn't bet the race, and not, but that's what I think about the off-the-turf Red Smith.
Fair assessment. Well, this should...
Who's your next guest?
I've got Tony swinging in here. You mentioned Collegeville Girl. We'll get an update on her as it happens. And he's on her every morning. And we'll find out how she's coming into that opportunity after the unfortunate circumstance at Saratoga.
Yeah, she flipped in the gate. People may not remember. She flipped in the gate and seeking the ante up in Saratoga. On Showcase Day.
Thanksgiving wishes, Andy. For you'll be spending it at Aqueduct, which is his
what's
spend the number.
To spend Thanksgiving
exactly.
In the VA.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Well, this is a fun sequence tomorrow, and a lot of money. You got to figure a million will.
Oh, and the pick six? Sure, it'll be over a million bet for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I wish all your listeners a happy Thanksgiving.
We appreciate it. Andy Serling, everybody. Thanks, buddy. We'll recap everything with him next week. 90 minutes in. Let's take the break here, bottom of the hour. And we had the little hiccup at the top. Tony, yet to come. John White. We'll see about getting Neil back and finishing our segment with Neil as we look forward. I reached out to Steve Haskin, and you know, Steve had been... out visiting his grandson, and he's back. It was funny because he was worried about last week, and because you know, he had gotten back literally on Wednesday night, and so he texted me. He said, "You know, I've been gone. I really haven't been doing anything." I said, "Don't worry." He said, "We're not on the air." So, want to see if we get Steve in here for a holiday greeting as well. Second half coming up. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. We were the ones at the docks, helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Races, Cowboy Junkies, with their fabulous version of Sweet Jane, and we're going to see about getting either Neil back or Tony. And, you know, speaking of Sweet, there's one question I wanted to ask Neil. I don't think I brought it up with him last year because it hadn't come across my radar. But I ended up... Did I talk to him about the sweet potato pie? Casey, who is it that's become big with sweet potato pie? Is it Gladys Knight? No, it's not Gladys Knight. Patty LuPone. Not Patty LuPone. Patty Patty LaBelle. Patty LuPone. Patty LuPone might make a... She might make a decent... Patty LaBelle, right? She's created a whole industry with her sweet potato pie. I had never in my life opened up a thing of condensed milk, and it's kind of gross, to be honest. It's a bit of a gooey. I don't get it, but you know, it's big in those kinds of pies, and I'm not a baker. My grandparents were bakers. My grandmother, Ida, and Julius, and my mother and I shared that, actually. Neither one of us were great bakers because we're not patient. And and not great with level measurements. You got, you can't, there's no, it's like being a scientist, being a baker. But anyway, I was inspired to make a sweet potato pie, and, Tina was naysaying, and she was scoffing at it, and then she loved it. Absolutely couldn't believe how much she liked it. And so that's on the menu. And the weird thing is it a side dish or is it a dessert? Case, what's your call? Is it, do you put it on the plate with the turkey and stuff, or do you like it, or is it later? And Casey gives the big thumbs up to the sweet potato over pumpkin. Interesting. Let's ask Tony Black. Tony, sweet potato pie or pumpkin pie?
I tell you what, I love both of them. When my mom makes them, she doesn't even have to tell me which one it is. But my mom makes a sweet potato or a yam, so use yams instead of sweet potato. And like you said, it could be a side dish or it could be a dessert. Whatever she does, whatever she cooks, you know, the one thing about the Greeks, if they don't have restaurants, they still do know how to cook when it comes to how they feed you at your home. And my mom, I tell her, you missed your calling. You should have had a restaurant. And her sister did have a restaurant in Baltimore, Maryland. And but it's amazing how these Greek ladies can cook. My mother makes a stuffing that's unbelievable. You forget about the turkey, and you'd rather just eat the stuffing. I tell her, make plenty of stuffing, so even when we got leftover turkey, we don't have to eat it. We can eat the stuffing. And she puts the chestnuts in it, the stuffing, where some of them are whole, some of them are quartered, and the sausage and the standard whatever you put in stuffing. The stuffing's as good as any part of the meal. You fill up on the stuffing. So I'm really looking forward to this Thanksgiving, and I really have been watching what my mom does when she cooks because I want to carry on the tradition. And even my mom with regular potatoes, mashed potatoes, I heard the earlier segment before I went on to the show that I had to do before this. And my mom can make mashed potatoes the day of or the day before. And the way she reheats them, if she reheats them and she uses sour cream and milk and everything else.
Yeah.
You would know if she made them when she gets done reheating them with the sour cream and the milk and the cream, whatever. You wouldn't know if she made them that day or she made them the day before. You would not know the difference. But that's the bar, you know.
One thing, you know, you just said something that I'm going to bring up with Neil if we get him back, and that is, you know, one of the alternatives that people can do if you want to get that out of the way and you're limited for space, a twice baked potato, which really it's a mashed potato. It's what you're talking about. When you said sour cream, it popped in my head. Well, that's almost a twice baked potato. You throw in a little cheese, some bacon, and you pipe it right back into the potato shell. And those absolutely you can make the day ahead and then just warm them up in the oven. And it's one more thing that you can get done, you know, the day ahead. It twice baked potatoes. Good thought.
And you can do it with the sweet potatoes the same as the white potatoes.
That's true.
She does it with both. And you won't know the difference. It's twice baked potatoes. You know, you scoop out all the stuff, you cook it, and then you refill the potato. And she does that. Boy, I tell you what, she didn't have a restaurant. She should have had a cookbook at least. But the other day, I made a beef stew, and she put her final approval on it. She says, "You're learning. You're learning, my boy. You're learning."
Well, you know, she
for 60 years.
I was going to say, she's had 60 years to teach you.
I'm a slow learner. I told her, I'm a slow learner. She said, "I know you're a slow learner, but you have finally learned."
You know, I got to ask you, too, because this could come up with Neil as well. You know, you talk about the Greek side of things, and Neil and I touched on last year the ethnicity of everybody, the various, you know, it's an American classic. Yes, there's all the things that everybody is going to see on their table, but every ethnicity has their own little wrinkle in when it comes to Thanksgiving. What Greek specialty is involved on the Thanksgiving table?
You know, with the stuffing, putting the chestnuts in the stuffing. That's a little bit of, I don't know, you know, if that's standard. But the chestnuts in the stuffing are something special. She makes the molds that everybody looks forward to. And, you know, there's no shortage of sour cream in our house. You know, because even with the mold, with the cranberry and the Jell-O and the walnuts that she chops up into the Jell-O mold, And it's topped with this mixture of sour cream. And you think of these things and you say, they're as good as any dessert, yet they're part of the main course. But I'm just trying to think of something that maybe would be different. The stuffing is different. I'm going to get her recipe.
It sounds different. And, you know, you're also making me think of something. While you think, you made me think of something, Tony, that I realize I haven't seen on the streets of New York or Philadelphia forever. And that is, when I was a kid, you know, there used to be, of course, the vendors that would do pretzels and they'd have the charcoal. But there was also guys that had the chestnuts, roasted chestnuts on the street. I have not seen that in I can't remember the last time I saw a guy with one of those charcoal carts and that was roasting chestnuts and people used to buy them. It's my 59th birthday. Maybe I'm showing how old I am bringing up roasted chestnuts on the street, but I remember that as a kid.
Well, when we were growing up, it was not uncommon for him to soak the chestnuts, with a knife, split them a little bit, and they put them in the oven. That was, you know how we have snacks and stuff where people eat pretzels and different things as snacks? You know what our snack was at night? The roasted chestnuts out of the oven a lot of times. My father loved chestnuts. But the way she does and puts them in the stuffings, you're like looking for the pieces. She quarters some, she leaves some whole. You look for the pieces. Like you got chips if you didn't get some chestnuts in your stuffing. But I think that's like a authenticity. That's something the Greeks do with the chestnuts. My dad, we grew up, the chestnuts were our snack at night a lot of times.
How about that?
You know, without her salad. Her salad will be a true Greek salad. You know, it'll be a mixture of the greens and a little bit of the beets that she puts in it. But, of course, a true Greek salad, you cannot have a Greek salad without the feta cheese. You know, my mother still works a few days a week in an office. And when somebody in that office has a birthday party or some good, they've done something good, the owner of the company says, "Marge, make sure you bring a salad. Can you bring a salad? It's Sharon's birthday tomorrow." Her Greek salad, you'd die for her Greek salad. I'm not
kidding. Tony.
And in her office, I don't even know what she puts in it. And she mixes it. But in her office that she works, the one thing they'll tell him, "Marge, can you do us a favor? Make a salad." And she always makes a big one. I said, "How many people there?" She says, whoever wants to eat it. She always comes home with an empty bowl. It'll be enough for 20 people.
Wait a minute. Your mother's working in an office a couple days a week. And she's how old?
She's 93 years old. Nobody retires in our family. You know, my mother said, she says, "You know, retirement's great, and I want to see you do that because I don't want to see anything happen to you before I die." I said, "Well, you don't set a good example." I said, "You call retiring cutting back to 4 days a week and only working a 4 or 5 hour day. That's retirement."
93.
93. Unbelievable, the Greeks. She says, "Well, retirement isn't you've reached a level of success. Retirement's saying you're just giving up." I said, "See, I don't want to give up."
Too funny.
If you treat it like giving up. You know, there are people that retire and they really enjoy their lives and they do so many, you know, exciting and fun things, you know, and they keep busy with their family. And my mother does that. My mother comes down to the house every afternoon. She lives 5 doors down. And my little girl comes home from school, and my little girl doesn't self-feed. She feeds my little girl, and you know, and helps me with Madison. And it's every day. It's like her second job.
Unbelievable. It's, I tell you, that came as a surprise to me, that you would, when you said that she's working still a couple of days a week in the office. That's amazing. And you're coming out to the office too at the racetrack, and Collegeville girl came up. You must have, I don't know if you got a chance to hear Andy. You know, we mentioned the stake coming up on Friday, and it's so great to see her back in the entries, Tony, and give everybody an update about the opportunity for Richie and the team at Aqueduct on Friday.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I really think the world of this filly. She's really a nice filly. She does everything right. And since her last experience, and she started back at the racetrack after she got hurt, I have not missed a day of getting on her. I've been on her absolutely every day. Came out Sunday to get on her, even though everything in the barn walked except her, because she's in on Friday. Got on her this morning, and I'll tell you, the track, I believe she'll be as close to being fit as any horse can be without running and training, just training. She's going wonderful. She's a beautiful mover. She goes every day. I jog her once the wrong way, turn her around, gallop her. And her gallop, her natural gallop, is little, not running off, but it's just a natural long stride, and she's doing great. I think she's as fit as you can get one training. And I really look for a good performance from her. In fact, Richie said, as good as you get along with her, why don't you ride her? I said, because I'm not going to ride her, Richie. And they did offer her to me. I said, because if something would happen where she didn't run her race, I don't want to be the guy who isn't riding every day to be the excuse. You know, any horse can get beat. I think she's going to run a big race Friday. I know she's in the 11 hole. It's a 13 horse field. I like the 11 hole because she has speed, but she doesn't have to be in front. If something wants a ding-dong and go along, or a few of them want to hook up, she loves looking at a horse. When I gallop her in the morning, she'll come around there. If she targets something in front of her, 70 yards or 20 yards, whatever it is, in front of her, she takes you to them and enjoys getting past them. She knows what the game's all about and only run once in her life. She's going to run good short on Friday, and you're going to see a horse that even runs better when they run her around two turns. She's a nice horse to be connected with.
Well, Tony, certainly rooting after everything that happened at Saratoga, which was really harrowing for Richie and all the owners on hand, and the anticipation, but just the fact that she's healthy, that more important. And even though it was a missed opportunity, the many more to come, including potentially later on, and as Richie has said, and as you've indicated, there's nothing to think that she won't stretch out, and boy, that would only add further to the really strong lineup of young horses that seems to be developing in Philadelphia right now. And obviously, Chuck Zackney is at is right at the forefront of that, with both the filly with Jaywalk, who's going to compete for the champion trophy, and Butchie Reed has got his filly that looks special. So there's a lot going on. A colt, I should say.
Yeah, he's got the colt. The name escapes me. Magical Mischief?
Yes. Yes. Mischief. There you go.
But he looks like a horse that will go long. Frankie Pennington won on him a couple times, and he says he just waits for you to call on him to do, to go on further. So he looks like a nice, he's going to be a nice 3-year-old that'll go long. I think his next start is going to be in the Remsen.
Right.
Robert Reed ran a horse Sunday that broke its maiden, a filly 2-year-old. She shows promise. You know, I give the Racehorse Development Fund, I give the people who, because it brings more money to parks, the people are bettering the stock at parks, and it shows, because we've had horses go and leave parks and compete at other racetracks and win races and win graded stakes and win maiden races, as Collegeville Girl did at Saratoga. It shows the money's going to good use. We are bettering the caliber of horse that races at parks. And isn't that what the Racehorse Development Fund money is supposed to do? Give people money to act, to acquire better horses or breed better horses? I looked at a two-year-old maiden filly race on Sunday. There was not a backyard bred in that race. You know, there was Quality Road, Curlin, you name it. There was some well-bred horse, and there was like 10 or 12, 13 horses, all of them nicely bred. I said, people are utilizing that money efficiently and effectively and bettering the stock that is at parks and bettering the PA bred. What else can you ask?
Well, you had one, you know, the Shamrock Rose storyline makes it to the Breeders' Cup, and it's funny. What's funny about Shamrock Rose's win, speaking of Pennsylvania breds, her win and the previous year, you had Unique Bella, who was a Pennsylvania bred, and all the expectation, and she actually runs really the worst race of her career. And, then here comes Shamrock Rose, and she does what Unique Bella couldn't. The horse that the butchie horse is Maximus Mischief, to keep watching. And the one that you mentioned the other day was Secret Czar, is the filly that won the other day.
Yeah, nice horses. I mean, they show true quality in their races. And, of course, they're lightly raced, and who knows, anything can happen. But, you know, barring any bad luck, these are horses that are showing talent. And as horses race and they move into a positive direction, they can only get better. And it really does say a lot for the people at parks. They're really trying to put better horses out there on the racetrack. And they not only can run better horses at parks, they can shift into other races. You know, like I said, Butchie's horses are going to run in the Remsen. And then it brought back thoughts of the Remsen because, you know, years ago, if you won a race in New York, they were few and far between. And I was fortunate enough to be on a horse called Devil's Honor, who won the Pennsylvania Derby. And his road to running long was in New York. We ran him, and I won the Remsen on him. I'm saying, man, you know what? Now they're not few and far between, those victories in New York. They're coming more regularly. We got better horses.
No, I got to also, looking at the results from the other day, from Sunday. How about a shout out to Andy Simoff with a pair of wins? How about that?
I was there. And, you know, it's a pair of wins, and the horses, the one horse, you didn't think he was going to get there, and then he just rebroke and finished and got there. And you say, man, these are nice horses, you know? I can remember ride races at Keystone Philadelphia Park, and it was beaten 3,000. It was $1,800 to the winning owner and $180 to the winning jock.
Wow.
And I went to many of those beaten 3,000 going long. But we're down to 35 claiming, you know, and the purse might have been, when they jacked it up, might have been 5,000 or 4,000. And now you win a race, and it's a maiden race, and it's a $45,000 pot. They were stakes when I was in my, heyday. So it's good to see not only the money has gotten better, but it's utilized properly. They are getting good horses. And the jocks were making good living. Not that I didn't make a good living, and I didn't sabotage my career, but the jocks are making good living there, and the owners can justify having a horse there and saying, well, we're running for horses, for persons that are just, you know, below New York, but we're a park, and we're running for good money.
Well, and Tony, this doesn't include all the earnings ever, but because the stats only go back. Equibase starts in 1976, so the first 5.5+ years of your career aren't included. But earnings of $63 million, $63,653,000, is what your horses have earned.
And you know what? A couple of my ex-wives are really proud of me. You gotta make a joke of it, you know. You know what? $63 million will be a drop in the bucket when it look at a guy that has a career there on this day, $63 million, they'll say, man, we're earning $3-4 million a year. That's, you know, that's $4-5 million a year. That's 10 years will be past you.
Well, you listen. You, a lot of the guys think you think about all the guys over the last 25 years that you know that that you rode with that you know that are long retired, and you stayed around to be able to be active during this period where the purse money really soared and really became significant, where even, the even second tier, riders that don't get as many opportunities, they can make a real living.
Yeah, they really can. I mean, you're talking about when I started riding, jocks mount was between $25 and $35. You got $100 jocks mount now. You get 10% of the win, 5% of second, 5% of third. In the days that I rode, it was 10% of the win, which was a significantly smaller purses, but you got, if you finished second, you got $50. It didn't matter if it was a $100,000 stake, unless there was a private agreement, you got $50. So, even finishing second and third, when you finish second in a $45,000 maiden race, you get a few dollars, You get $450 for finishing second. We won races and didn't get $450. The other day, I was sitting next to Eric Lopez because I rode on Sunday, and talk about old riders. I get a call on my cell phone. It's from his granddad, Carlos Lopez. Carlos, not Chucky. Chucky's dad. So it's Eric's granddad. And he says, you old, I don't want to give you all the words. He says, what the heck are you doing still going out there? I says, you know what, Carlos, we were just talking about you. I'm sitting next to your grandson, so don't be nasty. And he says, oh, you're sitting next to Eric? And I said, yeah. I says, what a good rider he's turning out to be. And I handed him the phone. I says, Eric, talk to Grandpa. And we got to talking and reminiscing. And it's something. When you get to reminiscing, Carlos is talking about when Chucky, his son, first started riding, and I was an old rider. But we were talking about the old riders of his era that I had the fortune to learn off of, like Walter Blum, Buck Thornburg, Garth Patterson, guys like that, Carlos Lopez. We learned off of guys like that. And here, you know what, being a jockey is a brotherhood. We never forget each other. We're still looking at what each other are doing. And here's a guy that hasn't ridden in many, many years. He must be looking at the race performance, seeing I'm on a horse, and he's calling me. So being a jockey, it is a brotherhood, I guess. And it's a great fraternity to belong to.
Well, Tony, we're going to certainly be rooting on Friday for Richie, as you will be. And we'll hope you have the you and the family and all the extended relatives. Best wishes for a wonderful Thanksgiving. And we'll catch up a week from Thursday. So, Tony, I'm glad we were able to get you in here this week before the holiday break.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and I want to wish everybody, you especially, a happy Thanksgiving, and a happy birthday, too. But I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, and it's a great time of year to be with the family. Enjoy it. Do it. I know all my family's going to be together, and we are going to have another memorable Thanksgiving thanks to Mom's cooking. Thanks to my
exactly, family. Exactly.
And every night when Mom goes home, every night when Mom goes home, I make sure I make her answer me. I say, I'll see you tomorrow, Mom. And she always answers me, okay.
Tony, have a wonderful holiday. Thank you, buddy.
Jay, you have a wonderful holiday. It's definitely always a pleasure. Thank you, Steve. Bye.
Thank you. Tony Black, everybody, the best. We'll be watching on Friday. And hope the Philly comes back. Honestly, I'm not rooting against anybody, but tough not to root for after the plus we've been hearing about her from before her debut. You knew about Collegeville girl. That was great. Tony's Greek mama into hour three, and we got to get to John White and more. Stay with us.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.